we go.
This is the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast, part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network, brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000.
All right, let's talk.
Enjoy the best of today's show. Here's Adam Gold.
Couple of quick things before we welcome in Boo Corrigan, NC State Director of Athletics. Let's start with North Carolina, shall we? We can actually kind of transition to coaching here in a second. Hubert Davis has named his coaching staff officially. Sean May elevated to assistant coach. Jack Emanuel, Director of Player and Team Development, added to the coaching staff. Brad Frederick returns as head coach. Jeff Lebo, former Tar Heel, former East Carolina head coach, brought in as an assistant to give Hubert a guy on the bench who has been a head coach before. Most of the other particulars are still around. Eric Hoots is still there. Jonas?
But I'm not even sure. It depends on who's saying it. If you're saying it's Jonas.
It's not Jonas Pope. So I did that on purpose.
Jonas Corposalo.
I guess it's Jonas Seradian. I don't know how to pronounce his name. I apologize for that. I've only heard him as Jonas, Director of Strength and Conditioning. So all those things stay basically the same. Hubert Davis just officially announcing his coaching staff. Walker Kessler announced that he would not be returning to North Carolina, that he would be attending Auburn. Now, he's from Georgia, and apparently where he's from in Georgia is relatively close to where Auburn is, so it's closer to home. But, you know, Hubert talked about in the post, in the press conference, he talked about wanting Walker Kessler to come back. So, you know, without being too dramatic about it, it's kind of the first L that Hubert has had to deal with, because when you openly talk about something like that, it's clearly something you are going to try and accomplish. And it's fine. This is not a bad sign in any way, shape, or form, but it's obvious that Kessler, for whatever reason, decided Auburn was the better place for him. Okay, I'm not in any way arguing with that. I wish Kessler the best. I hope he has a monster sophomore season, and he'll be eligible automatically because that rule is about to go into effect. We'll talk about that with Boo Corrigan in about a minute or so. But to me, it's Carolina wanted him to return. Davis wanted him to be back, and now it's possible that they might be down all four of last year's big men. Garrison Brooks put his name in the transfer portal. Dayron Sharp's going to the NBA. Baycott's going to try. My guess is that Baycott comes back. Just my guess is that Armando Baycott comes back. But we'll have to see what happens. So we got Walker Kessler going to Auburn. Wes Miller leaves UNCG, goes to the University of Cincinnati. That is a great move for him. Look, it's hard to believe that he had been at UNCG for 10 years. But he has. And he has built a program at UNCG. And if he wasn't going to be the head coach at UNC, you might as well move on, take a step up. And Cincinnati's program is outstanding. It's got tradition. Hadn't gone very well under the coach that replaced Mick Cronin. But this is a perfect place for Wes Miller to maybe take the next step in his coaching career. And Nolan Smith was elevated to a full-time assistant coach with Nate James moving on to Austin Peay. So it's a good move for Duke to keep it, because this is what they do. If you have played point guard for Duke, you are going to be an assistant coach. And don't argue with me about Chris Carriwell. Carriwell handled the ball a lot when he was at Duke, when he was playing in Durham. So good move for Wes Miller. Good move for Duke to elevate Nolan Smith to assistant coach. If we can talk to him tomorrow or early next week, we'll find out if Duke is planning on going back to wearing suits, because, man, Nolan is got sartorial splendor on lock. But this year, where everybody was wearing athletic clothes, it definitely did not play to Nolan's strength. A couple of quick things as we wait on Boo Corrigan. the athletic director at NC State. Yesterday they voted, and it has to be approved, I believe, by a larger vote to allow transfers without a one-year sit-out. Now, every sport but five in NCAA sports have allowed automatic eligibility. You wouldn't have to sit out a year. The only sports that didn't allow it were football, men's and women's basketball, baseball, and ice hockey. Believe it or not, ice hockey's part of that. Every other sport, so if you're playing volleyball, running track, or whatever, you can just transfer and be eligible. But in those five sports, that was not the case. But that will change. So next year, when a player transfers, they'll be automatically eligible at their school. I've been in favor of this. If people have been listening to what I do on the radio since I got here in 1998, I've been advocating for this basically since, because to me, that's just fair. Al, can we have the soundbite? I want to play this first because this is important. It will get us into our conversation.
It's a pandemic.
This is, I think, 53 weeks ago. Boo Corrigan, the athletic director at NC State, gave us that, and it will tell you what that was in reference to, but we have been using it nonstop because it is a great way to say, hey, people, times are different. Boo Corrigan is the athletic director at NC State, and he joins us on the Adam Gold Show. Thank you very much for your time.
Adam, it's great to be with you. Thanks for having me.
So, again, thank you for that soundbite, because we literally have been using it basically every week for an entire year. So let's start with, look, there's a lot of things I want to get to, but let's start with just an overall view of what your program, your department has done this year, because it seems to have been a pretty good year, but I'm not even sure how you go about judging success in a year like this. Dave Doran got an extension, his assistants got extensions, and I think that's a huge part of the culture there as well. But what has the year been like?
Well, I mean, I'd start by saying it's our department. It's not my department. It's our department.
Okay.
And we're part of NC State. We're excited to be here. And, you know, Adam, in an odd way, this has really kind of brought us together as a department and as a university. It could have been exceedingly divisive. And it could have been a situation where people start worrying about only themselves or only their sport. And what we've really found as we've gone through this year is that people are looking at the people they've worked with for, you know, in my case, it'll be 2 years at the end of the month. In other cases, it's, you know, Raleigh Geiger's been here 40 years.
Mm-hmm.
But we all share one thing, and it's a great passion for NC State. So how do we judge it? You know, academically, we had the highest GPA we've ever had as an athletic department in the fall. We had 77 of our 540-plus student-athletes have a 4.0. Competitively, you know, you talked about Coach Doran and what they've done, but you know, women's cross country coming in second, women's swimming coming in second, wrestling coming in sixth, men's swimming coming in eighth. The job Wes Moore did, I mean, you know, we're on a great trajectory from that standpoint. And then the third thing is, can't be any more proud of our student athletes. They created a group called Pack United to make sure that people like myself and their coaches and other students are aware of what's going on socially, and that we're in this together from an awareness, education, and action standpoint.
Boo Corrigan, NC State Director of Athletics, is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. The soundbite that we played at the beginning, and we have used it basically every week for the entire year, was referring to the rule that allowed spring sport athletes a free year of eligibility. So how did that work out for State? What was the financial burden on the university, if any? I assume there was, in terms of allowing those athletes to come back if they so chose.
Yeah, it really wasn't that great of a financial burden. We didn't have that many of our students take us up on it at that point. And, you know, Adam, at the end of 4 years of college, some people are ready to move on to the next thing, you know, and want to move on with their life. And they've already had a plan of where they were going to go and what they were going to do. And others wanted to stick around. Some of the others that wanted to stick around were in state, which, as you well know, is a lesser financial burden than being out of state or being in a private school. And, you know, so from our standpoint, I would say less than a couple $100,000 is what it cost us in the context of a, you know, roughly $90 million budget. That's really not something that we looked at as, oh, Lord, what do we do? Mm-hmm. It was more, all right, you know what, let's make sure that we bring them back. But really, let's make sure that we do all we can to keep the focus on our students and on our students' experience and do as little as we can to change that.
So was it had to be more of a roster crunch for certain teams. I know, you know, if it's baseball, for instance, all those kids were given the opportunity to come back. Some did, I guess, but it has to expand rosters. What kind of feedback have you gotten from coaches?
You know, it does expand it some, you know, but again, I think we've done a great job and our coaches have done a great job preparing our young people for the rest of their lives. So, again, it wasn't these enormous numbers that initially when I looked at it, I was really kind of scratching my head. But, you know, in looking at what it is, the group I really feel for are not so much the ones here. It's more the seniors in high school, maybe the juniors in high school, that are as well as the current freshman class, where maybe they thought they were going to get on the field or in the pool or on the court sooner, mm-hmm. but a senior came back, right?
Right.
And then you look at the seniors in high school and the juniors in high school, and you have the whole transfer portal. And what effect that's having on them. So I think there's a combination of a lot of different things that may take a little bit of time for us to figure out, you know, either what right looks like or what the new reality looks like.
I don't know if you're looking at – did I share my Google Doc with you? Because that was the next question that I have. Because we have this transfer portal that has already been in place for a few years, but now because of the free transfer rule, which was essentially passed yesterday, there's still another vote, I believe, that has to take place for it to become official, but it's going to become official for the next academic year. So with that coming – and one of the fallout, part of the fallout of that is incoming students. Quickly, your thoughts on the free transfer rule and its overall impact on college sports.
Yeah, it's, and you alluded to it, Adam. It's kind of been there anyway in the number of exceptions that were being granted, kind of moved it into this.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's our reality, right? So how do you look at that? And the scholarships that we give are four-year scholarships, right? That's what it is. But you've got young people that want more playing time, want a different style of play, maybe or want to go back closer to home, maybe have people talking to them and telling them different things. And those types of things. I looked at the numbers the other day, and it looks like it's close to four students per team are in the transfer portal right now. And that's what you worry about is the backside, right? So if there's roughly 1,300 was the number I saw, people in the transfer portal, are there 1,300 slots open? I don't know the answer to that. You know, and I think maybe it will figure itself out a little bit. The need now, and it's a little bit similar to our time at West Point, where you had to recruit kids kind of year over year to make sure they were engaged with you. I think coaches are going to have to recruit and then re-recruit every year when you have young people on your rosters. And then to the incoming high school students, you just kind of I don't know. You just kind of wonder how many coaches will look to fill their roster with high school students, and how many of them will look to fill them with transfer portal kids.
Boo Corrigan, NC State Athletic Director, is joining us. I think it's like with anything else. Part of my pushback is the automatic reaction that this is going to destroy college sports. College coaches always talk about, you know, making adjustments. Well, this is just another adjustment. Like a parent has to make an adjustment to how social media impacts their kids' lives, or giving them a phone younger than we had phones. Of course, I never had a phone because we didn't have cellular phones when I was a kid. But all of these things that are different today than they were even 10 years ago, we always have to adjust. I always trust that coaches will adjust to these types of things. And as you said, like, this has sort of been going on anyway the last 10 years.
I agree. As a father of a 19, 18, and 16-year-old, I can tell you I'm adjusting on a regular basis. But you're right. And if you're not adjusting, if you're not changing, I don't know how you're moving forward, right? Mm-hmm. And that's true regardless of the times, because the environment around you is going to change. The people around you on a college campus are going to change over. Certainly the students are going to change over every 4 to 5 years. Hopefully now not 6 to 7, but 4 to 5 years they'll change over. And you know, you have to, the phrase that I use around here and have from the beginning is keep your knees bent, because something's coming at you.
Right.
And we don't know what it's going to be. And we do know that if we stay together, if we pull together, we can come out of this at pace, not flat-footed, not going backwards, but at pace, and be the best NC State we can be.
Boo Corrigan, a couple of more things before we let you go, and I appreciate your time. I know everything is so hyper-busy these days, because I know I feel it, and I have a lot less to do than you do. Where are you on pending name, image, likeness legislation?
Once again, you know, it's coming. You know, it's coming, and certainly in Florida on July 1, mm-hmm. You know, is there a larger federal bill passed? When it does come down the road, what is the right, you know, we're looking at what's the right place in the athletic department to make sure we're doing everything the right way, right? Mm-hmm. And to make sure that the young people that we have here are doing it the right way, or the people that come in are doing it the right way. At its core, Adam, I think they should be treated like other students, right? And if other students can have a social media presence, they should be able to have a social media presence. If other students are allowed, you know, to run a trumpet camp or whatever it is, you know, those things, if they want to start a business, you know, I think we've done so much over the years, and I've never liked the phrase that athletics is across the street or over the hill or mm-hmm. through the woods or whatever else it is. We're part of this campus, and I think the ability to treat our students like the rest of the people on campus in terms of creating their own brand and having their own brand is a logical step to take as we move down this road. And you know, clearly federal guidance would be a positive, so we don't have different states with different rules and those types of things. But, you know, we've got a great new commissioner in Jimmy Phillips, who's all over this, as mm-hmm. John Swofford was. And, you know, I look forward to whatever gets passed and implementing it to the best of our ability.
Another Notre Dame guy in the mix. You guys are everywhere. Not that we want to, but we can't get rid of you guys.
It's kind of like the Corrigan family, Adam. There's a lot of us. We're not worth much. We're not worth much, but there's a lot. We get you in volume.
That is incorrect. All right, final thing, and it's really a follow-up to what we just talked about. Because when I look at name, image, and likeness, I just say, because I didn't even understand the phrase I saw the other day, within the collegiate model. I just don't know how you do that fairly, because that puts way too much of a limitation. I think, as you said, why not just treat them like any other student? So if they want to do commercials on Instagram, let them do commercials on Instagram. Just give them the same freedoms that any other student would have without restrictions, and just be done with it. And let the outside, let the third parties take care of these kids as they see fit.
It's going to be interesting to see where the whole thing comes down. It really is, because there's some strong opinions on all kinds of sides of this. And you know, it's really going to be interesting. And the other side of it, Adam, is July 1 is coming really fast.
Mm-hmm.
July 1 is coming really fast. And I was talking to someone the other day, and I think there's a John Wooden quote, or I certainly attribute to him, don't mistake activity for progress, right?
Right.
You know, and I think the most important thing is that whatever we do is progress towards ultimately what this new reality is going to look like.
You're a gentleman, Mr. Corrigan. I appreciate your time. Hopefully we can talk again within 1 year, but I understand how busy everything has been. But we still have the soundbite that we will keep forever.
Pandemic.
There you go.
Right.
We're going to keep that forever.
All right, brother. I appreciate you. Go Pack.
Elliot Amen, NC State baseball coach. They're on a roll. They have won 6 in a row, 7 of their last 9 in ACC play. But we're not going to start with his Wolfpack. We're going to start with a former Wolfpack starting pitcher. I termed you the president of the Carlos Rodon fan club. I know that's true. What a night last night.
Yeah, it was pretty sensational. We got through with our game, and you talk to the team, get ready. We're going to Notre Dame this morning, make sure everything's in order, and I head home. And before I can even get home, Scotty McCreary texts me and says, "Are you watching the game?" That Carlos is throwing great. So I get home and turn the game on and try to watch it, but the phone keeps blowing up with everybody from, you know, Bobby Brower, Carlos's agent, to, you know, everybody texting me to make sure I'm watching the game, which is pretty cool. And so we had a lot of texts going on as I tried to watch the end of the game, and it was unbelievable. And so happy for him. You could tell how happy he was. And I actually thought his interview after the game was outstanding. I saw him get interviewed by Pedro Martinez and obviously at the ballpark itself, and I thought he did a great job.
But did you just kind of slide in a Scotty McCreary text that you drop right there?
Well, no, that's what I think that's what the that's what kind of stuff means like to me. My first awareness of get home and turn the game on is that Scotty texted me to talk about how good he was pitching, and I think Scotty had actually watched the Cardinals and the Nationals that afternoon. I don't know where Scotty is, but I think he'd watched that game because he was talking about Kisner and Trey Turner. And so I was going home and watched the game anyway, because I texted Carlos. We were texting before the game because we're heading to South Bend, and it was ironic. I thought I was almost going to be able to get up there to watch him pitch, but we were day late. And so I was texting before the game. So I had it on my mind to get home as quick as I could anyway. But Scotty let me know he was doing quite well.
That is fantastic. Elliot Amen is joining us here on the Adam Gold Show. I want to get this from you about Carlos. He was non-tendered after last year because it had just been a struggle to stay healthy to get on the field. So what has it been like? I know you're close with him. What has it been like over the last few years when he's had to deal with various injuries, including Tommy John a couple of years ago?
Yeah, I mean, Carlos, when he first went up there, I think they the first year he was used quite a bit in a lot of situations. And I think the first couple of years, he did very, very well. But after that, I think one spring training, he may have come in spring training out of shape from that off season. Maybe hunting a little too much. I don't know. I know he's building a house, starting a family. And when you get too many things going on, sometimes it's hard to focus on everything you need to. And I think he might have come into spring training a little bit out of shape. And that preseason didn't spring training in the early season didn't go well, and I think that led to Tommy John surgery that year. But he got non-tendered, which is disappointing. And we talked a lot through that, as a lot of teams threw out some fishing lines to see what mm-hmm. the interest was, and didn't know where he'd end up. But I think that kind of disappointed him. And if I had to guess, knowing Carlos and the competitive person that he is he worked extra hard this off season, he had something to prove. And when Carlos Rodon has something to prove, I think he saw what you saw last night for a reason.
Before we let you go, Elliot Avent, could Scotty McCreary have played ACC baseball?
I think so. You know, we were texting about it last night. I told him I could use his slider in the bullpen. Matter of fact, I was talking to him about throwing. We're going to do a virtual first pitch for Chris Combs' ALS weekend. Next weekend, we're going to have an ALS game against Virginia Tech, and we can't throw first pitches on the field, so we're going to throw them virtually, and we're going to get, like, Trey and Carlos and Scotty McCreary and Andy Barquett and maybe Russell Wilson, some guys to throw a virtual first pitch. And I told Scotty the only stipulation his had to be that good slider he had. And he said it's not quite as good as it used to be. But, yeah, he was talking about competitive. Scotty McCreary is quite a competitive person too, and he had that good slider. He could have pitched here.
Okay. I mean, look, he probably has not thrown as many innings as some of those other guys. So unless he's playing in some men's league in Nashville or wherever he's based, he probably has a lot of innings left left in his right arm. Good luck up at Notre Dame.
Probably does. Okay, thanks a lot, Adam.
Chris Spatola from ESPN and Sirius XM, a man who's a veteran of college coaching. He played collegiately at West Point, joins us on the Adam Gold Show. Is my reaction fair?
Well, I think it depends on what you mean by so what, Adam. I mean, you care about the future of college sports as much as I do. Mm-hmm. So I think the discussion's important, but I know what you're saying. And I agree with you to an extent. The hard thing about this, Adam, there's two ways of looking at it. There's the philosophical way. Is this the right thing to do? Which I think a lot of us would agree that it is. It seems
right.
Like that's how you feel. And I feel the same way. But then there's the practical question of culturally, what does this mean? Like, what does this generation of college athletes, how will they be different? And then what will things look like in the future? And I think the hyperbole you're talking about there with Zagoria or whoever else is positing that position, I just think we don't know what it's going to look like. And so I think doomsday becomes the default when you really don't know what it's going to look like.
Chris Spatola is joining us here. I want to read a tweet from Dick Vitale, and I say this first. I love Dick Vitale. I could not have more respect for him. I think he is as responsible as the bracket for the explosion and importance of college basketball in the sports landscape. But he tweeted this out. This transferring all over the place is going to destroy our great game. The NCAA should think twice before officially making it that players can transfer without sitting out a year. The chaos going on is sickening. Only should allow players to transfer without sitting out when a coach leaves.
Yeah, I mean, I disagree with that. I see it differently than Dick, and obviously he's done it a lot longer than I have. But my concern, Adam, is again the cultural element to this. You know, what are we teaching young people? And look, I was raised to be told things that I didn't always want to hear, but they were the things I needed to hear. Mm-hmm. And it didn't mean that I just went away from that person or that coach. There were coaches that I have in my life that I did not like while they were my coach, but I'm grateful for now. So there's the cultural element to that I think is a question, and it's a fair one. Like, it doesn't mean you're a get off my lawn person if you are speaking in those generational terms. The other question I have, Adam, and this is where I think guys like Dick Vitale and others, they don't realize that the game has been on decline. I mean, the game has trended younger. These transfer numbers have been going up.
Right.
It's not like this new rule is going to change that trend. the game has been on decline. So somebody like me has been asking outside of the transfer thing, which I it does certainly have an impact. But what do we do to our game? You know, how do we get our game back? And I think one of the things that coaches are finding as they adapt to this new world order is you can't teach the game the same. Like, if you don't have guys for 3-4 years in your program, you have, for lack of a better term, you have to dumb things down. I mean, you cannot teach the game the same.
Mm-hmm.
Like Baylor this year, that team, that defense that Baylor played, and they were by far the best defense I saw all year, that was a 3-year process. Now, they had transfers, but those guys were in that program. You know, Jared Butler came back. That was a 3-year process. So you can't teach the game the same. What does this do to the high school market? Like, are mid-majors going to recruit exclusively the transfer market? Are these rosters going to be largely veteran ones where those veterans can assimilate quickly to a changing game? What do we do about tampering, Adam? Like, nobody's asking this question. Like, are we going to introduce tampering legislation? Because we know it's going on. That it exists in the NBA for a reason, which is where free agency is obviously predominant. What are we doing about that? Are the mid-majors now a farm system? Like, what do we do to figure that out? Are the mid-majors now a farm system for the high majors? What is the impact on APR? Things like that. So this is the way things are going to be. So rather than sit around and lament it, let's figure out some things that would make this better and would make it feel and look better.
Chris Pitola from ESPN and Sirius XM. There's a bunch of things that you referenced there. First of all, it's impossible. Whenever something is new, we always say it's the worst thing that has ever happened to anything without actually letting it play out. And then we realize, hey, you know what? Wasn't that bad. But to me, this has been going on for a long time, and we can't possibly judge based on what this new legislation will do, because this is also, we're living in, as our friend Gary Parish from CBS Sports always refers to it, during the dumbest pandemic of our lifetime. So the impact of all of the pandemic and all the players who are given a free year of eligibility, like Garrison Brooks, I mean, he's in the transfer portal. You know, he can go anywhere. And there's a lot of players who are going to take advantage of an extra year of eligibility and play another year of college basketball, because maybe they wouldn't be able to go somewhere else and play. Maybe they wouldn't be able to make a lot of money overseas. Maybe they can get one more year, pursue a degree, and still play ball. So we don't know how this whole thing is going to work out. I don't think there's an academic component to this, because I think largely the academic measuring sticks are kind of easily gamed, and I don't really think it's a concern, even of the NCAA or the member institutions. For the most part, I think it's all about basketball, and that's fine. But I think your other point about, will the mid-majors be a farm system? I think it is possible that it could ultimately end up that way, but so be it. We have to adapt to everything. Like, you raise your kids different than you were raised. So parenting has to adapt. Coaches have to adapt to a new way, just like they had to adapt to potential one-year players. We have to adapt now to changing rosters, ever-changing rosters. I think that's okay.
Yeah, I don't disagree with you. I don't. And I've come around on this. You know, I have been not slow to sort of come to this, but I have tried to balance the philosophical here. Like, I want these athletes, these young people, to have agency. I want, this is the United States of America. You don't like someplace you're at, you should be able to go and do what you love to do somewhere else. That is philosophically, I agree with that. I think we need, and again, this is not a new thing. Like, I am of the belief, Adam, that if this one-time transfer immediate eligible rule was not in place this year, we would still have close to 2,000 kids in the portal.
I agree.
Like, this was trending this way. So to get all activated by a new rule, I think is absurd. Now, if people want to, again, have a legitimate discussion about what is our game going to look like, I think you're 5 years late, but what is our game going to look like? Like here's another thing. Like, we get all wrapped. Where are people all wrapped up about these absurd rules that they presented yesterday or proposed? Like, what are we doing in terms of taking care of the game and then adapting this new level of free agency around it, this transferring around it. I think there are bigger things in terms of protecting the game, because let's remember, Adam, these guys are transferring, but they're staying in the game. The problem we have is we're hemorrhaging the top end of our talent, and the talent, the most talented players are not staying in college basketball. Mm-hmm. But if these transfers, they're staying in the game, then what's wrong with that? I don't see a problem with that,
right,
on a large scale.
Yeah, it's funny because you and I have talked about this, and you and I are on absolutely the same page with the G League Ignite team, the NBA Academy, however you want to refer to it. But there will be two players drafted, maybe in the top five, certainly in the top 10, that never stepped foot in college because the NBA provided an opportunity for them to earn money and train as a professional. And these will be two of the top 10 for sure players selected. And there might be as many as four players drafted off of that team. The more that becomes an avenue to the NBA, the more players are going to take it. And that's even more of a talent drain. And I go back to the fact that for years, Mark Emmert and company have demonized one-year players to the point where Adam Silver went, well, they don't want, the college game doesn't want these kids, so we have to do something to accommodate. I don't think they'll go and eliminate the one-year waiting period. I think they will try and make the G League much more of an option, and I think that will happen over time.
Yeah, and I've said that to you before. I don't think the NBA has any interest in saving college basketball. I don't think that, they don't want to be in bed with Mark Emmert. So until a move is made in terms of the leadership, I don't think the NBA has any interest in partnering with the NCAA or trying to help college basketball. It doesn't see it as a feeder to that, because they're only, the best players being fed to that league, generally speaking, are only in college basketball for a year. That's my biggest concern about the sport. You can't, there's no business that can sustain when you're losing the top end of your people talent wise year over year. So how do we make it, more, and it's not just about the one and done. Like, how do you make it more attractive for an Amando Bacot or a Matthew Hurt to stay in college basketball? How do you make that more attractive? And the answer may be it's not really possible.
Right.
Okay, fine. But those are the questions. That, to me, is what's hurting. This transfer thing, this is where we're at. Times evolve. I mean, 60 years ago, we integrated college athletics, and I'm sure there were people at the time saying that was going to be a disaster. Times evolve, and this is where we are now, and we can either rail against it or recognize that this is where we're at, and how can we make the game better? And I think we have too many people crying doomsday and not focusing on the things that actually matter and would make the sport better.
Jackie Robinson, this is the anniversary of his breaking the color barrier for Major League Baseball. Chris Spitola, ESPN, SiriusXM. Love talking shop with you, sir. You always have cool things to say, and I appreciate your time.
Thanks, Adam. You too, brother. Be well, buddy.
You've been listening to the best of the Adam Gold Show podcast. Part of the Capital Broadcasting Podcast Network. Brought to you by Capital Financial Advisory Group. Get your total retirement income plan by texting Adam to 21000. Don't forget, this podcast drops every weekday at 3 p.m. Or you can find it at WRALSportsFan.com, the WRAL Sports Fan app, or you can subscribe for free at the iTunes and Google Play stores.